Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are plunging headfirst into some fascinating source material centered on a concept often discussed, but maybe less understood in depth, Lebensenergie.
This is the German word for life energy.
Yeah, exactly. And our source explores how this vitality isn't just about physical movement, but it's cultivated through mental and even, you know, spiritual movement too.
That's right. This text offers a perspective on well-being that looks past simple things like chronological age or, you know, obvious physical signs of wear and tear.
Okay.
It suggests that what truly matters for deep, lasting vitality is, well, something else entirely.
So our mission in this deep dive is really to unpack the key insights from this source. What does it fundamentally tell us about this Lebensenergie? What signs should we look for?
And maybe most importantly, what specific practices or shifts in attitude does it recommend for actively cultivating it in our own lives?
Yeah, the how-to.
The core idea the source presents is that vitality isn't just about the physical body inevitably declining, like watching joint cartilage thin on an x-ray as you get older. It's far more connected to our inner states, our fundamental attitude towards life, and the conscious practices we engage in that can sort of maintain energy and well-being throughout our journey.
So much more holistic view.
Profoundly holistic, yeah. Seeing body, mind, and soul as deeply interconnected, all contributing to this life energy.
Okay, let's unpack that core idea then. The source explicitly states that Lebensenergie isn't measured by your birth date or just how much physical wear and tear your body shows.
Right.
So if it's not chronological age or thinning cartilage, what are the true indicators of this vitality, according to the source?
Well, what's really insightful here is the shift in focus. It moves away from static physical signs towards more dynamic, expressive qualities.
Like what?
The source points to indicators you can actually observe in how a person is in the world. Things like the alertness in their eyes, a tangible affirmation of life they seem to radiate, the softness in their facial muscles and their gait, the rhythm and depth of their breath, even the quality of their voice. These are presented as the real metrics of life energy.
Wow. And the source makes a pretty powerful claim. These qualities aren't predetermined by what we usually think of as natural aging.
Exactly. It says they can be actively cultivated throughout life.
Oh.
Through things like joy, love, wonder, laughter, tears. Also embracing new experiences, letting go of what no longer serves us, taking on appropriate responsibility.
But not too much responsibility. Right. I mentioned that.
Crucially, without overdoing it, yes.
Yeah.
Also engaging in play, nurturing our dreams and hope and, you know, maintaining belief. It's quite a rich list of internal states and actions.
It really is.
And the source expands on this, emphasizing that vitality is also shaped by how we inhabit our physical body, how we perceive and shape our life's path,
okay,
how we integrate our past experiences, our perspective on the future and the meaning we find in life, and maybe most crucially, how fully we are capable of being present right here and now.
This brings us directly to that profound mind-body connection the source highlights. It argues the physical and the spiritual or mental realms aren't separate at all.
No, they're fundamentally linked. This linkage is absolutely crucial to the source's whole perspective.
How so?
It points to research areas like psychoneuroimmunology.
Mm.
That's the study of how our psychological and neurological states influence our immune system.
Right, I've heard of that.
The source specifically mentions findings in cancer treatment, showing how the immune system's effectiveness can depend significantly on a patient's mood, what the source calls their soul images or internal landscape.
Soul images?
Interesting term.
And their basic will to live.
Yeah.
It's a powerful illustration of how our inner state impacts physical reality.
Okay, let's dive into the physical dimension first, like the source does. Why is movement so essential specifically for the physical body, according to this text? It gets quite detailed here.
It does. It uses specific examples to really make the case. Take joint cartilage, for instance.
Yeah. The source points out it's unique because it lacks its own blood vessels.
No blood vessels. So how does it get nutrients?
Its oxygen and nutrients are supplied solely through the movement of the adjacent joint partners. The pressing and releasing.
Ah, so simple movement, like even just flexing your knees while sitting isn't just fidgeting.
Not at all. The source says it lubricates the joints. And this constant nourishment is vital because wear and tear arthrosis is a natural process that happens over time and reduces the joint's load capacity. Movement is literally its lifeblood, precisely. Another example it gives is the veins.
Mm-hmm.
As we age, vein elasticity naturally decreases. The source explains that our leg muscles, especially when we walk, act like a crucial pump, pushing blood back up to the heart against gravity.
The muscle pump.
Exactly. And the simple act of rhythmically tensing leg muscles even while sitting or lying down actively supports venous return and can prevent issues like swollen legs.
Practical stuff. And it mentions magnesium for cramps.
Yeah, it suggests magnesium. Plus, it throws in these interesting natural tips. Garlic for keeping vessels elastic and horse chestnut for keeping them dense. Little practical details supporting the main points.
It's fascinating how specific it gets while building this larger holistic argument. What about the spine? That's a big one for many people.
Definitely. Spine and spinal discs, a source of discomfort for so many, often linked to prolonged static postures, like sitting or standing all day.
Right. What's the source's take?
It explains that discs are primarily made of water. Sustained pressure, like from sitting, squeezes that water out.
Okay.
This decreased volume can then lead to pressure on nerves, causing pain, and that defensive muscle tension we often feel. The source notes that the disc's water content, along with back muscle strength and overall back resilience, naturally tends to decrease as we age.
This is where that sponge analogy comes in, right?
Yes. That's such a powerful way to visualize it.
Explain that again.
Well, the source suggests lying down is like the sponge sitting in water. It can absorb, sure. But if that's all you do, it implies it can kind of decay from lack of stimulation.
Right.
But sitting or standing too long is like leaving the squeezed sponge out of water. It can't absorb new fluid and nutrients. It dries out, becomes less resilient.
Got it. So the sponge needs that rhythmic squeeze and release to soak up what it needs to stay healthy and plump.
Exactly. And it connects this need for rhythmic stress to bones, too. They need weight-bearing activities like walking, ideally outdoors.
Why outdoors specifically?
The source connects this to sunlight, not just for vitamin D production for bones and metabolism, but also, interestingly, it suggests sunlight is needed for the metabolism of the psyche itself.
Wow.
Cells need oxygen, obviously. But the soul, the source adds, needs that connection with nature.
Bringing it back to the spine then, what does the source say keeps it healthy?
It highlights that a healthy back relies on strong supporting muscles, the abdominal and back muscles. And it states that the best resilience and, importantly, energy flow through the body are achieved with an upright posture.
An upright back.
And the key insight here for back longevity, the formula it suggests, is that the back needs to be cared for in three ways. Loaded upright, even when you're sitting, moved regularly.
To do all that stuff, nourish joints, pump the disc sponge, stretch and strengthen muscles.
Exactly. And, crucially, it needs to be regularly relieved of pressure.
Okay. How do you relieve it effectively?
The most effective relief position the source recommends is lying on your back with your legs bent. This flattens the natural curve in your lower back, the lumbar curve.
Taking the pressure off.
Yes, relieving those small vertebral joints and the discs. And you can even use this position, the source notes, to gently strengthen abs and back by slightly lifting your upper body. It's about building both relief and movement into your routine.
It really is all about finding and maintaining that dynamic interplay, isn't it? Tension and release, activity and rest.
And that's the core principle running through it all.
Speaking of putting things into practice, our source suggests a brief interlude right here, a small physical exercise to kind of embody some of these principles of awareness and movement.
Good idea.
So if you are able, let's try this together. Go ahead and stand up. Place your feet about shoulder width apart, pointing forward.
Get grounded.
Yeah. Feel your feet. Allow your knees and hips to be slightly bent and relaxed. Let your belly relax, keep your chest and head upright, and just let your shoulders drop.
Feeling that connection to the ground beneath you.
Okay. Now gently circle your shoulders back a few times, pulling them back slightly and then letting them fall, releasing any tension there. Good.
Nice, easy movement.
Now reach up alternately with your hands, one then the other, stretching tall as you do, feeling that length extending up your sides.
Sensing the movement and the stretch through the whole torso.
Okay, next, press your hands together firmly in front of you and really tense your whole body, squeeze everything, including the muscles in your face. Hold that tension for a second.
Really feel it.
And then release completely, letting out a breath. Ah, let's do that one more time. Tense everything and release.
Feel that clear contrast between the tension and the relaxation that follows.
Definitely. Now, just stand upright but relaxed. Feel your feet on the ground again, notice your body, and simply observe your breath moving naturally in your belly and your chest. Just for a moment.
A simple moment of embodied presence. It's a small action, but it connects you powerfully to the physical form and these principles we're discussing.
Okay, feel free to have a seat again if you were standing. You know that sponge analogy we use for the physical discs?
Yeah.
The source suggests this rhythmic need for pressure and release, activity and rest, applies just as much to our mental and emotional states. It links it to concepts like yin and yang, or even Goethe's famous poem about breath being a process of inhaling life and exhaling self.
Yes, and the source brings in that old proverb, "He who rests, rusts." This holds true for both body and mind. Stagnation leads to decline.
Right.
But, and here's a crucial qualification the source adds, he who never rests also rests faster.
That's the balance, isn't it? Which immediately brings in the principle of the right measure.
Exactly. The source views us as like active trainers and caring friends to our own body and soul. We're responsible for keeping them in good shape and, importantly, good spirits.
And a key quality of a good trainer,
according to the source, is precisely that sense of the right amount, the ability to find a healthy rhythm between intense activity and necessary relaxation. The activity needs to be regularly tiring enough.
Tiring? That's interesting.
You have to genuinely challenge your metabolism, your muscles, your emotional life, or your mind. You need that stimulus.
But, and the source is very firm on this, you have to do it without crossing your boundaries.
Absolutely. It states clearly that setting boundaries, learning to say a distinct no when needed, whether it's demands from work, sport, or social life, is often essential.
Why essential?
Both for your own well-being and, indirectly, for others. Otherwise, the source warns, you risk depleting yourself to the point where you are the one who needs help, unable to give.
That makes sense. And this principle of right measure, it applies across all activities the source discusses, right? Like sports.
Yes. For physical activity like walking, jogging, cycling, swimming, dancing, the key isn't extreme exertion. It's doing it moderately but regularly, with enjoyment and avoiding excess.
So the how is more important than the how much.
Precisely. The quality and the rhythm matter most.
And this is where it gets really practical again. The source gives a strong warning about like athletic ambition, especially if you're untrained or older.
It does. It recommends getting checked out by a doctor first, heart, circulation, bones, joints. And it advises starting with guidance, maybe joining a group or a club.
Sensible advice.
And the source even gives specific guidance on how moderate exercise should feel. Mm. You should be able to hold a conversation without being completely out of breath.
The talk test.
Yeah. It suggests getting a medical assessment for your maximum pulse and wattage on an ergometer, you know, to get some parameters.
And the effort itself
should bring joy. It should tire you just enough that you fully appreciate and benefit from the recovery time afterward. And crucially, you should feel good both immediately after the activity and the next day.
That's the benchmark then. Feeling good after and the day after.
That's the source's benchmark for finding the right measure in physical activity. And this concept extends just as much to mental and spiritual activities.
Okay, but like what?
The source lists things like engaging your intelligence, learning new things, working on memory, practicing psychomotor skills like cycling or manual crafts, creative pursuits like music, painting, writing, engaging in cultural activities, and social connection. All count as movement.
And the insight here is that regularly practicing these mental and creative activities actually keeps both body and soul young, healthy, fit, and in good spirits.
That's what the source states. This practice is directly linked to increasing both your quality of life and potentially your life expectancy.
Wow. So consistent mental engagement maintains brain plasticity.
Exactly. And it supports your body's performance for these abilities well into later life. The brain, much like muscles, requires movement.
What kind of movement for the brain?
The focused movement of thoughts, the conscious development of awareness around feelings, and crucially, physical movement, especially in fresh air for vital oxygen.
Ah, the link back to physical movement.
Always connected.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling mentally tired or low, the source's practical tip is simple. Get out into nature and move.
And it even suggests ginkgo.
Yeah, it offers that specific suggestion, noting ginkgo can support brain function, alongside, of course, a healthy diet.
Okay. And connecting this back to the inner state, virtues like love, care, mindfulness.
The source posits that core virtues, like love, care, integration, appreciating life's beauty, mindfulness, wisdom, these aren't just abstract concepts. They are intrinsically linked to our inner state and overall attitude towards life. Cultivating these actually contributes to our vitality.
Which naturally leads us to the idea of connecting with what the source calls our inner source.
Yes. It suggests that each of us, in our own unique way, intuitively knows what has sustained us, what has provided that inner strength throughout our lives. We have a sense of it.
And the source encourages us to acknowledge that.
Acknowledge and appreciate what our body and soul have already navigated, endured, and achieved. And then it introduces this really profound concept, the inner observer.
Okay, tell us more about this inner observer. What is it from the source's perspective?
It's described as something within you that remembers everything. A part that has accompanied you through all your experiences, thick and thin.
Like a witness.
Exactly, a witness. And its fascinating quality, according to the source, is that it hasn't aged in the conventional sense. Rather, it is matured.
So, this inner person, the one who saw things as a child, who witnessed all your emotions and thoughts, this part, the source claims, is fundamentally unaffected by the passage of time.
That's the claim. And, according to great people or wisdom traditions it alludes to, perhaps even unaffected by death.
That's deep.
It is. And this inner observer, the source says, sits at our inner source, available to provide everything needed, especially the fundamental strength required for happiness.
So the insight is that by listening to this inner feeling, by treating our physical body with consistent love, respect, attention, patience, care,
we are, in effect, preparing a comfortable and pleasant dwelling place for our spirit, for that inner observer. We're making our body a welcoming home.
And learning to adapt to life's flow, the source uses a swimming metaphor.
Yeah, learning to metaphorically swim with the current rather than constantly fighting against it like struggling in rapids. The source suggests this allows us to perceive and seize daily opportunities for both challenge and refreshment of body and mind.
Which brings us to the source's specific rules for swimming through the day.
Right. Learning to swim effectively requires technique, and the source offers some guidelines.
Rule number one is conscious attention.
This means dedicating yourself fully to what you are doing and where you are in any given moment, really being there.
Wow.
The source emphasizes doing this ideally without judgment, with open eyes, perhaps even with a sort of childlike enthusiasm. The key insight here is that thoughts dwelling on the past or worries about the future, those are what interrupt our connection to the magic and energy available right here, right now.
So living moment to moment allows you to live outside the usual confines of time.
That's the idea, the source posits. The power and magic of the present moment, accessed through attention, are what give you the ability, the wings, to explore the depth and richness of that moment. And it encourages practicing this conscious attention, even in mundane, everyday activities.
Okay, makes sense. Rule number two.
Conscious breathing.
Ah, the breath. How does the source frame this?
It uses a vivid analogy. The head, with its constant stream of thoughts, can be like a wild horse, always wanting to run off.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
We're subject to its unpredictable moods, it suggests, until we learn how to take the reins. And the source identifies the breath as the primary reins for guiding our thoughts.
The breath as reins, I like that.
Conscious breathing, the source explains, is a direct way to stay connected to the present moment, which, as we discussed, is where real life actually happens, while still navigating the flow of thoughts and feelings.
And it links inner and outer worlds.
Yes. The source views breath as the fundamental link between our inner world and the external environment. It even notes that ancient Indian traditions understood prana, the vital energy in the atmosphere, and believed its energy could be consciously inhaled and directed.
This feels like another good point for a brief practical moment, putting rule two into practice, connecting breath with awareness.
Let's do it.
All right. If you're able, maybe stand as you did before, feet grounded, knees and hips slightly bent, belly and shoulders relaxed, breathing freely, back and head upright.
Reconnecting with that grounded posture.
Now, hold your arms parallel out in front of you and begin to circle them in a slow spiral motion, gently moving up and down. As your arms move down, slightly bend your knees. As they come up, straighten your legs again.
Feeling that gentle, flowing movement through the whole body, coordinating naturally with your breath.
Yeah, feel the ground, feel your body move it, and feel your breath supporting that movement. Just do that for a few gentle cycles.
Allowing the breath to just deepen naturally, no forcing.
Okay, wonderful. You can settle down and have a seat again now, and just take a few moments, maybe close your eyes if that feels comfortable, and simply observe your breath.
Just noticing.
As thoughts drift in, try gently releasing them on the exhale, maybe imagining them floating away like smoke. On the inhale, perhaps imagine breathing in fresh energy, maybe visualize it as light, filling your whole body.
You could even pause briefly at any spots where you feel tension or pain and just mentally direct that imagined energy there.
The source suggests you can deepen this further by connecting the breath to the imagination of a beautiful inner image, a positive feeling, or maybe a cherished experience.
Bringing in that positive focus.
The insight here, according to the source, is that this conscious connection breath, focused concentration on inner images or values, and a sense of devotion or purpose, this is an age-independent method for connecting with the fullness of life.
And when you are connected to this fundamental life force,
your inner peace and your love for life are, according to the source, far less easily shaken by external circumstances. You become more resilient.
Being connected to this fullness allows you to perceive meaning, maybe even a guiding hand in your life's journey. It makes it easier not to take your personal fate too seriously.
Right.
It enables you to genuinely rejoice with others, to approach the world with an open view and maybe a helping hand, to love life, even when it presents significant hardships, and crucially, never to lose your sense of humor.
That sense of humor feels important. Okay, bringing us back to rule number 3. We touched on it briefly before with activity and rest, but now in the context of nourishment and elimination.
Right. Since humans obviously need more than just air and love to survive,
unfortunately,
the source reminds us to pay conscious attention to what truly nourishes our body, soul, and mind. And equally vital, to consciously get rid of the excess.
The schlucken.
Yeah, what the source refers to as schlucken, meaning waste or toxins.
And it makes a critical point here. This isn't just physical waste, is it?
Not at all. It explicitly includes mental and emotional schlucken, things like chronic stress or accumulated depression. These states also require cleansing processes, just like physical toxins do.
So how do we cleanse this mental and physical schlucken?
The source lists several pathways. Huh. Through the skin, pores via sweating, like through sport or sauna.
Okay.
Through the lungs, by consciously breathing out tiredness or a bad mood, mm-hmm. especially during movement like walking or running.
Using the breath again.
Through the kidneys, by ensuring you're well hydrated, drinking lots of water. And through the intestines, by consuming enough fiber.
And the key link.
The source stresses that this cleansing process is always most effective when combined with plenty of movement. Movement helps flush everything out.
Okay, that covers the 3 rules. Finally, the source delves into what it terms transpersonal aspects, getting into deeper dimensions of consciousness.
Exactly. It proposes a kind of 3-part model.
Mm.
There's the ego consciousness, which is our everyday sense of separate self.
Our I.
Right. Then there's soul consciousness, and finally a higher, or cosmic divine consciousness.
How does it describe these?
The source suggests that soul consciousness is more dominant early in life, like in the womb and infancy. Ego consciousness develops as our mind interacts with what we perceive as a separate environment, and learns to deal with bodily needs. And the source notes that most people primarily identify with this ego consciousness throughout life.
But soul consciousness is different.
It's described as far more constant and stable than the ego. It's seen as unaffected by time, space, or changing external circumstances. It's characterized more as a loving, calm observer.
That witness again.
That accompanies us through all of life's experiences, the ups and the downs.
And how do we connect with that? Or the higher consciousness?
The source suggests that practices like meditation or prayer, when engaged with from the perspective of the soul, can help us recognize the deeper truth of our being. They can reveal the path to the heart and potentially open us up to that higher consciousness described as a connection to an all-encompassing, permeating love and creative power.
It makes an interesting point about illness or setbacks, doesn't it?
It does. It suggests that when the body is healthy and things are going well, many people rely almost exclusively on their ego. But experiences like illness or major setbacks can serve as powerful teachers.
How so?
They reveal the body's vulnerability and the ego's inherent limitations, its powerlessness in certain situations. And the insight here is that these challenges can actually be catalysts.
Catalysts for what?
For prompting us to perceive our life and our physical body more consciously, encouraging us to shape and appreciate them with greater gratitude. The source suggests that a deep longing for healing, or maybe just the simple experience of inner peace or happiness, that feels independent of our age or physical strength. That can be what opens our perception to the possibility of the soul and the heart playing a larger role.
Does it offer any specific practices for this?
It does mention intentionally shifting attention to the belly area. It says this is supported by something called the navel reflex.
Navel reflex.
It doesn't detail exactly how to perform this reflex in this text, but it suggests its purpose is to aid body awareness and open you to soul consciousness. It mentions helping connect you to heaven, yang, and earth, yin forces, which the source believes are stored near the navel and kidneys.
Interesting. So connecting to our center.
Yes. The insight is that connecting to your physical and energetic center, the navel and the heart, makes it easier to release the grip of expectations, both about yourself and others. This fosters greater mindfulness and conscious presence.
So instead of tensing up and worrying.
Exactly. The source suggests that instead of tensing muscles and draining energy by clinging to worries or intrusive thoughts, we can choose to live the present moment with an open heart, a relaxed belly, and conscious attention.
It also mentions integration reflexes.
Yes. Again, without detailing the specific techniques, it states these practices can support relaxation of both body and mind, help to sort of relativize the dominance of the ego, and improve our contact with these deeper dimensions of self.
And the benefit of all this.
The source concludes this section by noting that quietly sensing the subtle changes that arise from engaging in these kinds of practices can lead to a deeper knowing of your own body, its specific needs, its hidden depths, its full possibilities. Mm. Ultimately, it cultivates the ability to truly enjoy the feeling of well-being. The sheer joy of inhabiting and breathing fully within this body and through this embodied connection better serve and enjoy life itself.
Wow, okay. We've covered a tremendous amount of ground in this deep dive into our source material today. We started by redefining Leben's energy, not by age, but by these dynamic, cultivatable qualities you can see in someone's attitude and presence.
Yeah, moving beyond the purely physical stats.
And we explored the fundamental physical needs for movement from lubricating joints, that sponge analogy for the discs, supporting veins, bones, and keeping the back resilient through rhythmic activity, and importantly, conscious relief.
And we delved into the equally vital mental and spiritual dimensions, that crucial mind-body connection, like with psychoneuroimmunology, the idea that the mind, like the body, can rust without engagement and rest.
And that principle of the right measure in everything we do.
Finding that balance.
We then explored the source's practical framework for actually cultivating this energy, those three rules for swimming through life.
Conscious attention anchoring you to the present moment.
Conscious breathing as the reins for the mind and a way to connect to vital energy.
And that third rule, the right measure in nourishment and elimination, getting rid of both physical and mental schlocken.
We even did a couple of short exercises to feel some of that.
And we touched on the deepest layer proposed by the source. The concept of connecting with an inner source beyond the ego, accessing soul and potentially higher consciousness, supported by practices that enhance body awareness and allow us to inhabit our physical form with love and presence.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's leave you with the source's really powerful concluding idea to think about.
Yeah, this one's quite profound.
It's the idea that within you resides an inner observer, a part of you that has witnessed your entire life journey, matured through all your experiences, but is presented as fundamentally untouched by the passage of time.
And potentially, the source suggests, based on wisdom traditions, even untouched by death.
This timeless part, the source suggests, sits at your inner source, always available, providing the deep strength needed for happiness and connection to life's fullness.
So the question to ponder is, what would it mean for you to live more consciously from that enduring place?